Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the third quarter conference call hosted by Tom Rogan. My name is Sheila, and I'm your operator for today. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded, and now I'd like to hand over to Tom. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the third quarter 14 conference call of Norske Skog. I am Tom Rogan, Head of Investor Relations. I'm joined by the corporate management team. Firstly, the CEO, Sven Ombudstvedt, will give a brief introduction before we open for Q&A.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Just a few words about the third quarter. In general, the third quarter is rather uneventful. The trading conditions have been more or less as we said after the second quarter. Stable raw material prices, fixed costs, slightly down in accordance with our fixed cost programs. Volumes on par with the second quarter, which we have deliberately taken some downtime as planned but, in the newsprint sector, which means that the energy seasonality effect on the volume will only be in the fourth quarter of this year, which is similar to last year. The gross operating earnings is compared to last year, third quarter is significantly up, with the European business performing better than last year and the Australian slightly worse. However, compared to the second quarter, this is 40 million down. This is mainly due to production disruptions and so the particular disappointment for us in this quarter is the poor performance of the Boyer converted mill. So the ramp-up takes more time than we thought, and while there is still an ambition to increase the volume throughput, main focus is on getting the cost per ton down to the business case level. So productivity, right cost is the main focus. This has improved over the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. But compared to the business case that we invested on, we are probably somewhere between 25 and 30 million below that, which explains, say, most of the negative deviation from the second quarter. In addition to this, September is also the maintenance month, and the most important is the mill shut in Gold Bay, which happens every year. So if you compare to last year, it was the same, but if you compare to the second quarter, this is another factor which influences the quarters a little bit. But all in all, trading conditions more or less as expected, and going into the fourth quarter, we also expect trading conditions more or less on the same in terms of pricing and cost picture, a little bit better on fixed cost and somewhat higher volumes. That's the very short introduction, and I guess we can leave it open for Q&A.
Thank you. Are you ready for me to open up the lines for questions?
Yes, we are.
Wonderful. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw your question, simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised then to ask your question. All other lines will remain on listen only. I just remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. Okay, the first question comes from the line of Giuliano Durrell of Iron Shield Capital. Please proceed.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. The question that I have is, you know, what is your view on the supply and demand balance for newsprint and magazine paper over the next two or three quarters? And also, potentially, if you could comment, what is your view on prices on top 16 and whether you think that, you know, there will be enough closures in newsprint and magazines actually, you know, compensate for the structural decline in paper demand? Thank you.
Yeah, I guess this is, we will answer the question as a European question. I guess that's closest to our hearts, but obviously the question should be also global. The supply-demand for newsprint now in the second half of 2014 is quite okay. It's, we still operate below 90% as an industry, and despite the fact that there is about 5% shortfall year to date compared to last year in the demand side. So that's the status. I'll come back to the future in a minute. The magazine is lower, so we're into low mid 80s, depending a little bit on what grades you have. So here there is a not satisfactory market balance. We think that present margins and prices in the industry are of a nature which means that closures are inevitable. We are below marginal producers' cash costs. I think you can see globally that some of the same phenomenon occurs both in Asia and in North America, and here we see that the North American closures are happening. We have seen very little so far this year in the European context, but there has been some closures even recently affecting 2014, so even on coated mechanical reels, which is the weakest of the magazine grades, about 8% of the capacity has been removed this year compared to last year, and full effect of this will even be capacity coming out next year. So, having said all that, I think the balance is still not really where we want it. So pricing is still too weak, and I think we need to see more closures. But there's all evidence historically and also in other regions that this is actually happening at this type of level. So I think it's fair to say that we have reached a bottom level for pricing and margins, and that there is a probability that the pricing is going to improve. How much this is going to be depends obviously on further announcement and also the negotiations that we have not really undertaken for next year. Yes. So all in all, we think we're wobbling along on a low point in the cycle, and that there is at least a fair probability that this is going to turn. But we would certainly welcome further closures, which is needed in both in Europe and in other areas of the world.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Linus Larsson of SEB. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Yeah, maybe if I could follow up on that previous question. You said that if necessary, you will implement active capacity management. So could you maybe elaborate for a second what role Norske Skog intends to have when it comes to meeting the demand decline?
Yeah, I think we, in sort of the recent past, we have, as everyone else of a certain size at least have done, we have closed capacity, more what we term as our marginal capacity. The last one was also in PM4 in removing more than 200,000 tons of rice bag coated at the end of last year. This year we have not done further structural changes to the portfolio in with closures, but we have taken downtime in the newsprint sector, and I think with the lightweight coated closure last year, it was not natural that we took a lot of downtime there, but we have taken certainly downtime and coated magazine. So we will continue to do that, and we will certainly monitor the situation, and if needed, we will also then do further structural measures. But for the time being, I cannot be more specific than that.
And you commented in your report that within magazine paper, the market balance is not satisfactory. Could you talk a bit about the status at Valsum? Is Valsum at this stage EBITDA positive? And what you're thinking, you've closed one of two machines. So what you're thinking around the remaining machine that you have at Valsum?
First of all, you're absolutely right that with the closure of one machine, there has been a challenge to come down to a competitive level. New machine, storm machine is always a challenge. That took about 3 months from the end of last year until the end of the first quarter. You remember we commented this after the first quarter. Following on in the second and the third quarter and going into the fourth quarter now, Olsen is contributing to our result, not a result which would sort of us completely, but under the circumstances, I think the efforts have also been very, very good indeed. But clearly, having said all that, we have made no secret about the fact that this is our least competitive machine because of the technology, and this is in our industrial portfolio, it's the least competitive asset. So that's roughly where it is. But I have to underline that the efforts that has been done to get Valsum into the position where we are today have been significant, and for the time being, Valsum is contributing positive.
And also something completely different, but you've done extensive work in your Australasian division and repositioned your operations down there, which in a way one could argue make that division more sellable as a package. I don't know if you agree with that, but looking forward in your when you have maturity to meet within 12 months, what you're thinking around the Australasian asset, if you could give an update there, please.
Sure. I think we have never made a big secret out of the fact that the portfolio with these two business systems have very little synergies across, so the strategic future of these businesses could be different, for sure. I think you're also right that the turnaround that has happened there has been necessary for the local market development with rather sharp adjustment of the total newsprint consumption. So I think the business is in a much better shape going for sort of the strategic future now than it was a couple of years ago, even though the earnings profile has been rather disappointing this year because of the conversion project and the problems we've had after that. So I think it's indeed in a strategic position where it's maybe more interesting for other people. Having said that, our main job is obviously to keep these units competitive and to run them as best as we can, and then the external factors will decide if it's an interesting opportunity or not. It has not been a lot of interest from, let's say, Asian buyers into that region in the last even of the 7 years since 2007 program. But that obviously has changed a little bit now, and I think we have more optionality around that business going forward than we've had for some time. But we have no concrete things to comment. It still remains an integral and important part of our business.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Edward Stembridge of Observatory Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just a quick follow-up question, if I may. Talking about capacity management in Europe, I think you said you would hold back from making any structural measures yourself. Who else in Europe do you see who could take such measures?
I think everyone could take such measures. I think we all have capacity which is less than optimal, and I did not, at least not intend to say that we will never make any structural decisions. We have made them in the recent past, and we will always continue to monitor and see what is right to do. But I think it's clear that all players have marginal capacity in their portfolio, and in the recent past, most of the closures have happened in the north of Europe. I think there are also players in all the parts of Europe, in central and southern Europe, which carries marginal capacity. So I think there is room for closures from, in practice, everyone in the industry.
Okay, thank you. We
have no more questions in the queue at this time, so again, a reminder, to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. And the next question now comes from the line of Thomas Moore, Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. One of the points that you mentioned in your press conference and in the presentation slides is that with the repayment of the NOK-denominated bond that comes due tomorrow, there's now the potential to to do secured debt financing as a means, perhaps, of addressing the 2015 and 2016 maturities. Can you expand upon that? Give us any sense of what steps you've taken or what the timing of such a step might be?
I cannot give you any sense of neither timing nor the steps we have done, but I can just reiterate what we said, that with the NOC bonds maturing, our documentation now opens up various baskets, and to make life a bit simple, we have used the figure of around 200 million euros. This is not the precise figure, it's an approximation of the baskets available, which is now there for secured financing. I have to also remind everyone that we have done secured financing with the accounts receivable facilities we have done this year, which was allowed under the baskets that we had with also with the NOC bonds active. So it's not really a new thing for us, and it's a natural, in my opinion, a natural continuation to look at that, but I cannot give you any sense of what we will do or when we will do it. For the time being, at least.
And then, as a follow-on to that, you mentioned the AR facilities. Can you just give us the figure that was undrawn and available at the end of the third quarter?
At the end of the third quarter, we had three facilities active, the two Norwegian facilities, which have a frame of altogether 250 million NOX, and then the French facility, which is 40 million euros after the quarter. We have also signed an Austrian facility, which has a frame of 25 million, but obviously that was not in effect at the end of the quarter. So we gave also after the last quarter, we used about two-thirds roughly, and it's a rough approximation we have drawn at the end of the second quarter, and that is still more or less where this is at the end of the third quarter.
Right, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Nicholas Darcer of Norster. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Actually, it has just been answered, so just as a follow-up on the securitization, do you think you have capacity to actually have other securitization facilities on some of your other mills, so in Australia, for instance, or in other parts of Europe?
I think when it comes to Europe first, after the Austrian one was done in October, there's only one possible candidate in Europe, which is Walsum, and this concept legally is a little bit more tricky under German law, so it doesn't give the same security to the vendor as most of the European jurisdictions. So far we haven't really found a good solution for the Walsum receivables. So that is, in my opinion, unlikely than to your other parts, namely Australia. I think this is possible, but obviously the accounts receivables that we have on the newsprint domestic business and the exports are on very short term, so there's very little money to be secured there. What we have indicated in the past is with the ramp-up of the lightly coated volumes into Australian printers, mainly in the Melbourne area, this is from a theoretical point of view, a very good sort of asset to secure, and then you have to wait for a certain size before you do a transaction. There's no point of doing a very small transaction with the transactional cost involved. So I think that would be the natural next step for us to look, and then obviously we are looking at that carefully, but we cannot give you any guidance. It depends a little bit on the business volumes underneath.
Okay. And I understand that in Q3 you had a few events that impacted the gross operating earnings. If you were to adjust the gross operating earnings of Q3 for the summer stop at FCOM and for the following ramp-up at Boyer, what do you think would have been your, say, adjusted or run-rate gross operating earnings?
250 million.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Nick McDonald of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I was wondering whether you could just make any comment regarding your expectations for cash flow in the fourth quarter, and if you can, looking forward to the first half of next year. Thanks.
I'll have hand this back to investor relations, to Tom Long. This is one of his favorites.
Then the main point in the cash flow, then beyond, you know, the gross operating earnings, to generate working capital relief, and that should be in the tune of $200 million in the fourth quarter.
Okay, thanks very much.
And your next question comes from the line of Giuliano Torri of Iron Shield Capital. Please go ahead.
Well, just as a follow-up to my previous question, could you please discuss the trends of, you know, coal prices and energy prices on the plants that you operate? I mean, what has happened in the past 2 months? What do you expect in the future, considering that there is new capacity in coal coming online? You know, if you could, yeah, if you could discuss also the demand and supply balance on that part of your input costs. Thank you.
When it comes to energy costs, most of our energy costs are on long-term contracts. So you could say totally on the complete group, about two-thirds are on long-term contracts. So we have very little changes to that. The energy price in Europe, our three European mills are on more market-based shorter-term contracts. And here, obviously, there's a slight positive development. That is not, you don't really see it in the total picture because it's too small and you have certain offsets on other factors. But energy alone, is, you can see there's a slight positive development in Europe, meaning lower costs. Having said that, I think we're getting into winter period, which traditionally eats up some of that. So I see it more as a positive going into winter. So I still think that the energy costs globally for the group will be rather stable going forward, also with the fourth and even into the first quarter of next year. When it comes to pulp, obviously we buy much less pulp now than we used to do before, so it's not a huge cost element, but clearly we see some downward pressures in from our side. In other words, there should be a little bit of easing going forward, but we haven't seen too much on top of wood-based pulp so far, but that should be a positive for us going forward. But it remains a relatively small cost component in today's portfolio.
Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Jayant Kandalam of Lucor. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just had a few follow-ups. Firstly, with regard to the cost curve, you mentioned the energy and the pulp. I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on recovered paper going forward into the second half, I mean, in the Q4 as well as the first half of 2015? Do you have any thoughts on that, please?
Yeah, I think recovered paper has for some time been remarkably stable. I don't think we see a huge difference also going forward. Our exposure to recovered paper is to a large extent in France. It's the biggest exposure we have, and here we do say some of the more domestic collection items. We also have Austrian exposure, so clearly we're exposed to market prices, but it's maybe a little bit less than the Rotterdam-based prices see quoted in trade journals. But overall, we've seen, I should say also here, a surprisingly fat recovered paper market, and we don't really see any huge changes going into the fourth quarter. If you ask about the first quarter next year, I cannot give you a very precise answer because this is traditionally more short-term, and a lot of things can still happen before the first quarter next year. But for the time being, we can only give quite a flat guidance.
Thanks for that. That's helpful. Just a quick one on energy. Just wanted to have a clarification. Did you kind of mention that about one-third of the costs are more on a spot and two-thirds are on long-term contracts? Is it true?
Yes.
Is it right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, perfect. And just two other quick questions, please. Just wanted to know the insurance proceeds, which you believe you should have received in Q3, and I'm not too sure if I have that number. Could you provide that number, what you received in the cash flow?
Can you repeat that, please?
For the insurance proceeds, right, of the mill fire, which you're supposed to receive in Q3, I believe, a portion of it. I think you mentioned last time that it could be a reasonably material amount, but you didn't give us a figure. But would you be able to walk us through the cash flow statement, where exactly it is located and how much it is, please?
I think there's a bit of confusion. You know, you're probably talking about the settlement with the new contract negotiations in Australia. We had a fire that was years back, Saugbrugs in Norway. The figure, which is the correct one in relation to the contract negotiations in Australia, was received in the third quarter, but the figure has not been disclosed.
But you can't discuss the figure of the Australian contract settlement, right? You can't.
Okay,
and maybe just one last question before I move back into you. Again, a clarification on the big basket. Did I hear you correctly when you said that you had 200 million of the debt you could raise?
Yeah, it's an approximate figure, so there are several baskets in the documentation, but for simplicity reason, we have used the figure of around 200 million euros.
And that is after you take out the securitization or including the securitization which you already done?
Excluding, this is fixed assets, so it's excluding the accounts receivable figures.
Okay, great. Thanks for the clarification. I'll get back with you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Ida Turney of PLG Partners. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have just a question around to understand your thought process about raising senior, secured debt. Because obviously you're taking out a bond with that. It's got a coupon of 6.125%. So what kind of interest rates would you think you'd be willing to pay on that? And you know, what would you actually be securing?
We have no thought process around that. It's one out of several items which is constantly under review, so I don't have any specific thought process around that.
But if you sort of think about the business's leverage, which is still very, very high, you know, do you have any sense about what kind of cash flow or at what point the coupon might be prohibited on that? Because presumably it would come at a higher price, albeit it would be secured, a secured bond.
I have no specific thought process on that now.
And are the other options, it's basically the asset sales or further receivables?
We have discussed and disclosed all possible options in the past, and they haven't really changed material with this quarter.
Okay, thank you.
There are no questions in the queue at this time, so get a reminder to ask a question, please star then one on your telephone. And we do have a question which comes from the line of Giuliano Torri of Iron Shield Capital. Please proceed.
Thanks for taking my question. I'm very prolific today. I was wondering if you could discuss, you know, your strategy on debt buybacks and how that could be integrated into your potential refinancing of the 2015 and 2016 bonds. I understand that you have bought back some of those bonds in the past. I was wondering if you consider doing that again and where that cash would come from and essentially how that could be integrated into any form of secured finance that you could raise. Thank you.
We have no real comments around. We have the optionalities, as we have discussed, on financing, and we continue to work on trying to deliver as much as possible. Historically, we have indeed used bond buybacks in the market as discounts, and we have historically used a yield benchmark to see which of the outstanding bonds we are trading in. So that has typically been yield-based, but obviously it also depends on the market at the time when you go to market, etc. That has been the policy for many years now, and we followed that also this year. But having said all that, that's the past policy, it's guidance for the future, but not necessarily what actually will happen in the future. So we cannot give you anything more specific on that, other than to refer to the the options at hand and the policies that they've used in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, a reminder to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone.
I would like to thank you all for dialing in. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that now concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining and enjoy the rest of your day.